Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Welcome to Voices of Women. Today, we're going to talk with Eileen Workman. She is the author of Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World, and she also wrote Sacred Economics, the Currency of Life. So Eileen spent 16 years in the financial industry as first vice president of investments at a major Wall Street firm. After profound spiritual awakening, she departed that high-powered world of money and wrote the book Sacred Economics, the Currency of Life, and where she questioned the assumptions about the nature of capitalism. So Eileen challenges our longstanding economic assumption that endless material growth and physical expansion promote sustainable well-being in a post-industrial, densely populated global human society. And I'm sure we're all kind of questioning those things ourselves. And so she encourages us to appreciate that the entire living world is interconnected, interdependent, and internally alive, and that it deserves to be treated with reverence. In her new book, Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World, Workman calls down the wisdom and the words of the life force, inviting us to embrace our fullest capacity as a species. And through both of these books, we find a powerful spiritual thread that both acknowledges the natural limits of human self-consciousness and honors the rising natural impulse within our species to evolve beyond our present limited state of consciousness by becoming more life-aware. So welcome, Eileen.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. First, I want you to share your story. You know, tell us about that spiritual awakening experience you had that changed your life. I mean, you know, it has to be pretty big to leave a, you know, a powerful job at Wall Street, yes?
It was a really challenging time for me. And I think what the experience, what led to that experience was the fact that, you know, all through my childhood and my youth and my early adulthood, I had been focused on what I was supposed to get from the world. And I think this is the conditioning that most of us experience. Go to school, get good grades, get an education, get a job, get a partner, get a house, get a mortgage. All of this getting that is part of what we're conditioned to do trains us to want more and to feel constantly dissatisfied with what we have. And I reached the, what I would consider the pinnacle. You know, I was in the 1% in terms of earnings and income, and I was still finding my life very unsatisfying. So I went through a period of, I don't know, maybe 5 to 7 years of searching and exploring and questioning until I hit the wall and just realized that I could not do it anymore. I could not continue to play the materialistic accumulation game and still feel alive in my own soul. So what I would consider my spiritual awakening or spiritual emergency amounted to a mental breakdown, because my mind was so strong and so insistent that I couldn't leave the work world. I had to do the things that society had conditioned me to do, or I wouldn't survive. And at the same time, my heart and my spirit were saying, if you continue to do this, we won't survive. And what you're going to become and what you are becoming is not who you are. So when faced with that conflict, that inner conflict, the only thing I could do was allow my mind to break. And in the aftermath of that, that humility, that going to nothing, just releasing it all and honoring the fact that I wasn't in control and that there was something bigger and more important and more beautiful behind me, that opened the space for me to then start asking these deeper, more intuitive questions about, you know, who am I? Why am I here? What is this all about? What are we here for? What is life? And as those questions mounted and my need to hear answers grew, I fell into a deep inner stillness. And that's where this book emerged, was the response I received when I allowed myself to go still.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that stillness later. And I'm curious, well, a couple things that brings to mind, like how is your life different now moving from 1% to being with the rest of us, the 99%? You know, how does that look? how does that look like for you?
It's really actually been a lot easier than I would have expected it to be. It's had ups and downs, don't get me wrong. You know, when you walk away from the power dominator system, you find yourself in a place of having to be interdependent. You can't rely only on yourself and your own capacities. So the kindness of strangers, the love of family and friends, the support that you get when you just simply say, I'm in need, that is the connectivity that I have found that I didn't have prior to this, where I thought I had to do it all myself and was in control of my own life. And probably the most profoundly vulnerable thing I ever did was relinquishing the illusion of control over my life. And the most courageous thing I ever did was acknowledging that and inviting people to be supportive of me just as I've been supportive of them, and let it be a flow, let it be a compassionate flow of love.
Oh, yeah, and then that's such a lesson. I mean, for all of us, we all struggle with that, you know, that drive to be what we're told we're supposed to be and go in those careers, even if we're not 1%, you know, it's like, what really brings us happiness? And that's kind of what your book is about. Well, I want to talk about first, you know, the cover says written by life. What does that mean?
Well, for me, when I went through this process, what I discovered was that the way that I had been speaking to myself internally was not kind. I had been conditioned to be harsh, critical, judgmental, to be arrogant, to be insecure, to judge myself constantly and find myself lacking fairly frequently. So as part of this process, I have been repatterning the way that I speak with myself. So the book emerged as me asking a question of that sort of higher self, that life force, that Gnosticism that is inherent in all of us, and saying, you know, what is this about? And listening for it to come back to me from that place of love and compassion. And when I put it on paper, the way that I scribed it was exactly what I was hearing from that higher voice, that higher self, that deeper life force. So my hope is that when readers delve into the book, that's how they will receive it. Not as me speaking to them, but as their own higher voice, wisdom, deep wisdom self speaking to them. And that's the repatterning process, I think, that benefits us all, to learn how to love ourselves first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really what this book, there's so much in the book about that. And yet there's a part of me that goes, yes, and it's you too. You know, being it's your higher voice, it's also coming through you and that part. Even us, you know, and reading it, like you're saying, our higher voice, well, we have to own it within ourselves too. To be that, to bring it into ourselves. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so what you're talking about, too, is allowing this life force to come through.
Yes, yes. And my experience has been that, you know, I've never met anybody that doesn't have access to it, but I've met a lot of people who deny that it even exists. And one of the challenges of the human condition is when we stubbornly deny the possibility of something, then we barricade ourselves off from the possibility of it. And we won't even explore that possibility or that potential. So if we say, oh, this is crazy or woo-woo, and there's no such thing as a higher self or a deep inner voice, that my little brain is the most important thing and the most knowledgeable thing that I have access to, then that becomes our truth. But when we say, I don't know, but let me find out, and we run the experiment physiologically in real time in our own body, that's when genuine realization happens. And so that's what I encourage people to do, not to believe in what I'm saying or to believe in any of these ideas, but to simply be open and say, I don't know, and then do their own exploration and discover what's possible when we ask a deep question and then fall still.
Right. Yeah, it is our own personal work. It's not, you know, when and following anyone or going to a church and listening to a minister or anything. I mean, I hear that a lot in the church I go to, which is Center for Spiritual Living. That's how they speak of, you know, you got to know it for yourself. You know, don't just do what I'm telling you is the way to live. You got to just explore these things ourselves. So one of the things that I was very aware of is, kind of reminded me of the Conversations with God series by Neil Donald Walsh and the Course in Miracles. I studied that way back in the 80s. And how does your book compare? And of course, I'm going to give you less than a minute to talk about that. But how is yours different?
Well, I think that what this book does is it really focuses on process rather than on delivering wisdom or insight. It's an invitation to up-level your own inner process. So that's, you know, I didn't study A Course in Miracles, so I'm not quite sure what that involves. I've bounced against it briefly. I've read Neil's work. I love Neil's work. And I understand where he's coming from as well. So I would say it aligns with what they're doing, but to that extent, it's slightly different because it really is a step-by-step process.
Great. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Eileen Workman and her book, Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World. I love the title. Okay, we'll be right back.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
When your body is awakened, your spirit comes alive. Dana Canetto is a transformational guide, embodiment coach, and spiritual mentor assisting women in realigning with their truth and embodying who they are by connecting to the wisdom of their body. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show Network for Body Divinity Radio with Dana Canetto. For more information on Dana and her services, visit danacanetto.com. That's danacanetto.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Tune in to the hit show, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and I'm talking with Eileen Workman, and we're talking about her book, Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World. I ended the last segment saying I love that title, but, you know, we are so thirsty for love. I feel like the world's screaming, you know, if you were to listen to the news all the time. It definitely is a thirsty world. So, Eileen, tell us about, so one of the aspects, it's kind of like you're talking about a human journey. And what should we be focusing more on for this evolution of consciousness in our human journey?
Oh, great question. I would say one of the things that has really come clear to me over the past couple of years is the fact that, I guess the best way I can say it is that it seems like creation itself is speeding up. That as the number of people on the planet multiply exponentially, and as our inventions and our capacities grow exponentially, and as our interactivity moves exponentially, what we're doing is creating more and more new opportunities, new products, new ideas are getting implemented. And this creative burst of movement from the human species is having a positive effect in many ways, but it's also having a very negative effect. And the negative effect is that for thousands of years, probably as many as 7,000 or 8,000 years, our process has been to find the most intelligent, trustworthy people among us and tell them to write rule books that will tell us what to do in every situation that we might encounter. Now, if you're like an early agrarian human and you don't have a lot of change in your life, that's not hard to do. Something like the Ten Commandments would work fairly well for the average lifetime. But in the modern world where the circumstances and situations are changing so dramatically and new things are happening all the time, we cannot as a species write how to or what to do rules fast enough to keep pace with the rate of change. So everybody's floundering, everybody's struggling. We're in huge argumentative battles over what we should do versus what we shouldn't do, and everybody has their own opinions. So that's creating major fragmentation and hostility and disruption and dislocation. My thought is that the transition that we're coming to as a species is relinquishing what is obsolete, which is the belief that we can write rules that will tell everybody what to do in every situation so we always know the right thing and we will do the right thing unless there's something wrong with us, in which case we get punished, and switch from that to a deeper understanding of how to be in the world. So decoupling from what to do and recoupling with how to be, because how to be is the inner attitude. And when my inner attitude is aligned with life, there's nothing that can show up that I don't know what to do, because how I am choosing to be informs what I do in every moment. So it's incumbent upon me, do you see? It's incumbent upon me to determine how I wish to be in the world. And that's what I'm speaking to throughout this book, is how to reset your inner attitude so that your own values are so core aligned and integral that no matter what shows up, you know what to do.
And the problem is so many of us look outside of ourselves for those answers. And in every show I'm on, I'm interviewing someone, it's always about going in, you know, what are your values? Don't worry about what other people's values are, or what people are telling you. And which takes me to how this all fits in with the religious beliefs, because we've been grown, you know, a lot of us have grown up in Christianity or whatever religion, Judaism, Buddhism, Hindus. I mean, there's you know, telling us how to live. I mean, a lot of times, you know, it's just like you said, the Ten Commandments. There's all these rules of mm-hmm. how to live. And so how does this fit in with the religious beliefs that were brought in, you know, through the church, which sometimes mm-hmm. can be a little bit of dictating to us how we're supposed to be versus finding it inside yourself. Now, some people may argue that, well, they're going inside of their religious beliefs and finding those answers. But there's, you know, we are aware of a lot of churches out there that tell you how to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they actually tell you what to do. And the way that they teach you to be is submissive and unworthy and to consider yourself broken, and then the church will fix you. So, you know, this may be a little controversial, but my perspective is that most of the religions that are currently active in the world today are structures and systems that were put in place to manage a juvenile species. I think humanity has been in its adolescence for the last 7 to 10,000 years. And if you look at how teenagers operate in the world, you know, they're very narcissistic, they're self-centered, they're short-term, they're melodramatic, they're cliquish, they're aggressive, they're bullying, they're sexually repressed, they're sexually hyper-stimulated. You know, all of these things, these behaviors, brashness to the point of near suicide, that's what we have been as a collective. So we very rightly constructed systems to help restrain that excess energy and that ignorance of adolescence so that we didn't kill ourselves before we got to adulthood. So good for us. We did that. And most of those religions did it beautifully by keeping that sense of you have to look to the power dominator system to tell you what to do. And we did that. And we're at a place now where that doesn't serve us anymore. It's actually holding us back to believe that we're broken and unworthy and never going to be good enough and that we've been cast away from because we were bad children. So it's time for us to fall in love with ourselves and to wed ourselves to life as lovers, equal partners in this co-creative endeavor. In which case we learn to commune and be intimate with life rather than feel less than or distanced from it or alienated from it because it's like the parent that we don't get along with or that we're afraid is going to hurt us if we misbehave. And, you know, all of those feelings that are adolescent angsty feelings are what we're working through right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that really makes sense. And I'm sure for some people there's value in going to churches. And there's like, well, there's been the New Thought churches for actually a good century who kind of speak to this as you're speaking of, you know, telling, you know, having people go within and finding their own answers and to celebrate life and love themselves. So there is more of a drive for that now, at least around the people I'm around. I'm sorry.
Even the traditional churches are beginning to shift mm-hmm. their focus. I mean, you can listen to Pope Francis, the new Pope, and he is speaking very differently from the prior popes who were very authoritarian and said, this is how it is, and this is what you need to do, and this, you know, these are the rules. And he's basically saying, you know, the rules, yeah, they're there, but love and compassion trump the rules. And that's what we want to bring forward is love and compassion. So there's a shifting in that. And it's possible that some of these old school churches and old school religions are going to keep pace because they will adapt to the new humanity.
Yeah. Or they have to, or they won't survive. Well, I want to move to the talking, because there's one aspect of your book that I loved is the role of the masculine and the feminine. And you did mention about marrying yourself. And partly that was, you know, marrying the feminine within you and the masculine that's kind of outside you to embrace both. And how are we, so I'd love for you to talk about the role of the masculine and feminine and how relationships are changing and how do they need to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, here I think we have to be very careful to differentiate masculine and feminine from male and female.
Yes.
Because when we start talking about masculine and feminine, you know, male and female can get triggered by saying, that's not me. or you're talking about me in a negative way. So I think it's important to recognize that we each have masculine and feminine components within us. And when I speak of masculine and feminine, I'm speaking about the inner human, not individual males and females or male and female in the world. So from that perspective, I perceive that the masculine aspect of our psyche, our self, is our mind. The mind is that sort of explosive, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make and I'm going to build and I'm going to problem solve and I'm going to do things. Whereas the feminine is that receptive heart center, the compassionate aspect of ourselves that wants to nurture, that cares for, that births creative ideas and beauty and wisdom in the world. And so those two aspects go hand in hand in a whole human being. I would suggest that in our early iteration, when we were a childhood species, the feminine was probably dominant, particularly in hunter-gatherer times and matriarchal societies, where the world was perceived as one, we were children of the earth, everything was related. We didn't have a lot of intellectual wisdom or capacity, but we felt ourselves connected to the world. And when we had, quote-unquote, the fall from grace, was the birth of reason. That was the birth of our intellect, our capacity to see ourselves as separate from the whole and unique and having specialty gifts that we could bring forward and we could use and work with. So that's the masculine drive to change the world, to impact the world, to plant our seed and our trees in some way. And that has been running the show for the past many thousands of years, which is typical. When adolescence comes into play, the male gets that sort of burst of testosterone and becomes strong and powerful, and the female tends to go inside and go in through this sort of insecure phase. You know, there have been books written about that, how the woman becomes more insecure and goes through this process. So the feminine side of us has been repressed for thousands of years. The masculine has dominated. That's why we have this patriarchal power dominator system now. And what's being called for is the emergence of the adult feminine, for this juvenile female aspect of ourselves to reclaim its rightful position, to rise and be full partner with reason. We can no longer denigrate or suppress the loving, compassionate side of ourselves without creating a cruel and imbalanced society that nobody wants to live in. So we've got to call that forward, but not at the expense of all the gifts that the masculine side of us brings. So somehow we have to find a way to do that, to synthesize the heart and the mind so that the two function as one. That's
yes.
The process.
Yeah, so true. Well, we have to take another break. So stay tuned. We'll come back and talk more with Eileen Workman.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Thrive is what we experience when our mind, body, and soul operate as one. When we thrive, we excel on all levels. Thrive is the mindset that matters. It is essential to our being. Have you ever found yourself looking for the instruction manual on how to thrive? You'll find everything you need to help you feel strong, powerful, and peaceful in your own body. So don't waste any more time. Visit ThriveByJen.com today.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit SpiritFireRetreatCenter.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and we are talking with Eileen Workman and about her book, Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World. So, Eileen, please share your website, and I guess you have a blog there that people can read more about some of your life messages.
Yes, sure. It's very simple. It's EileenWorkman.com, E-I-L-E-E-N, Workman, W-O-R-K-M-A-N.com.
Great. So everybody can check out about the book and her blog and all that. So we were just talking about the feminine, and one of the main concepts in the book is about self-love. And you already mentioned it, you know, having that compassion and forgiveness and acceptance of ourselves. So one of the issues that we deal with and you talk about in the book, or life talks about in the book, is dealing with our ego. And then you even have a chapter called Listening to Your Ego. So let's talk about ego and how it kind of mucks, you know, if it runs our life, it kind of can muck things up.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, it's really hard to define what the ego is. Are we talking about the mind? Are we talking about the personality? Are we talking about, you know, some aspect of ourselves? I think the simplest way for me to explain what I mean when I use the word ego is it's a lens through which we view reality. If you think of yourself as the observer, your deep self, your I self is the observer, you can put filters in front of that window through which you look onto the world. And each filter that you put on changes what you see. One of those filters could be the filter of ego, which is a way of looking at the world, asking questions, whether you're conscious of them or not, like, what's in this for me? What does this say about me? What does this mean to me? What is that person doing to me? And when we wear that me lens, and that's the question, the underlying nature of the question we're asking the world, the answers we get are going to be very different than if we ask the question without that filter on. So asking questions through that filter often triggers reactivity that moves us into fear and constriction or anger or you know, all kinds of dissonance, impatience, unhappiness. Whereas if we simply ask the question, what is happening here, we may get a whole different subset of feedback, of information, because we're allowing more in. We're not only looking for the me answers, we're looking for the whole. And that gives us a greater range of responsiveness and a different way to react to the world. So I wouldn't say that ego is bad or has to be killed or destroyed or any of those kinds of things. It's a useful lens for us to use in limited circumstances. But if it's the only lens we're using, then we're cutting ourselves off from an enormous amount of information and wisdom and feeling that is out in the world that we don't have access to because we're ignoring it. It doesn't answer our question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. We can't you can't just get rid of your ego. And it does play a role. It's understanding. I think one of the things that my, a teacher I know says, you know, we can't lead with the ego. So one of the, kind of, this kind of leads to, you know, dealing with energy. And so mm-hmm. we're always often, many of us, you know, we all deal with conflict here or there, or we're feeling, you even mentioned like having the negative thoughts. And in the book, you talk about how it comes back to you. And one of the things you talked about is learning how to be neutral. And so you're not affected by the negative energy. So how can we learn to be neutral?
Oh, great question. I have found a practice for me that is very useful is that I can trust the wisdom of my body. Our body has so many different centers of reactivity to the world that move even below the level of our conscious awareness. So if we teach ourselves to tune into the state of our own bodies, it can give us clues and cues as to what's going on with us that perhaps our thinking hasn't even caught up with. So, for example, if somebody is speaking to me and I suddenly notice that my throat feels tight or my head feels really thick, then I know there's something going on with me that is reacting to this person before they've even finished what they're doing. And if I can put my attention to my throat, let's say if that it's my throat that feels tight, I can recognize that this is my communication center. And my impulse, the impulse that's rising, is to react to this person in a way that is not kind. That's why my throat's tight, because what wants to come out is, you know, some sort of really angry thing. So if I can relax my throat and stop and think, okay, whatever I say to this person, it's going to be infused with the energy of kindness, the frequency of kindness. Even if I criticize something that they're doing, I'm going to do it in a kind way because that's the way they can receive it. They won't hear me if I yell at them. They're going to go into defense mode and there we're off. We're doing the ego thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's a process. Is I feel that there's seven chakra centers in the body if you follow Eastern thought. And each of those chakra centers has its own wisdom and its own energy. What I have noticed is that if I look at each of those seven centers when I feel out of sorts, I can find the one that's tight or clenched, and I know what energy to bring in to myself, to bring myself into a state of neutrality. And for me, the pattern is the root chakra for me is the foundation of trust. So if I feel, you know, clenched all the way at the base of my being, it's because I'm not trusting life. I'm not trusting myself in the situation to know how to be. So I have to stop and breathe trust into myself. And then I can move up into, you know, the sexual chakra, which I look at that as the energy of openness. If I'm closed in my low gut, that's because I don't want to receive what's coming in. So I can open. So I go from trust to openness up to the solar plexus, which is courage. If I bring courage into the situation, then I can allow what's happening to arise and show itself to me fully. If I move into the heart chakra, there's compassion. I can bring compassion to whatever suffering or pain is arising, even if it's in me or if it's in another person. The throat chakra is kindness. If I move to my communication chakra, kindness. My third eye chakra is patience because I'm seeing something that the other person I don't believe is seeing. I've got a vision that's deeper or wider than theirs, but I can't share it with them unless I'm patient enough to allow them to share their truth with me fully without me interrupting or trying to suppress it. And then finally, the crown chakra is peacefulness. Because when I'm fully present and I'm not putting any filters in front of reality, in between myself and reality, then I can experience reality as it is. And my natural state of being is very peaceful with that.
Oh, that's a beautiful way to move through your body and make use of those, you know, chakra centers, energy centers to know. And so I think what you're talking about is really being in tune. And so many people are not in tune with their bodies. They're kind of more living out of their bodies. So they're not, because of fears of feeling, you know, we've been kind of conditioned to that. Like, I don't want to feel that. So boom, out of the body. But to go into your body and feel those places, you can get in touch with what's really, why am I reacting? You know, ask those questions. That's what you're saying. Kind of that curiosity, mm-hmm. like, oh, what did that just bring up for me? Instead of putting the focus on the other person that's made you angry, you know, and then again, yeah, the escalation of the of a conflict. So that's perfect. It's like, yeah, owning what's going on inside you and owning that and speaking to the truth of that. It's great.
And taking a breath. Taking a breath and before you respond, just checking in with yourself and saying, where is their tightness? Where is their reactivity? Where is their, you know, this sort of buzzing, angry buzzing in my head, or the snakes moving around, butterflies in my stomach? Can I stop that motion, that inner dynamic, and come back to center before I respond? And as far as the body goes, I think we've been conditioned. Most of us are trained to, I call it the lollipop effect, where our body is what we use to get our heads from place to place for the most part. We don't think about the needs of the body or how interconnected its experience is with our minds. We sort of look at it as a transportation vehicle for our heads. So to shift back and really to occupy your body.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, education taught that. I wish we had that in school, how to occupy your body fully, an owner's manual.
Yeah, and if we were to do that, we'd probably have less illness, because, you know, I talk about illnesses starting with, well, whether it's thought or just not being in alignment with spirit. You know, you have your spiritual body and your physical body and your mental and your emotional body, and when they're not in alignment, mm-hmm. You know, it's when disease can come in. And so paying attention to your physical, it's kind of what I've been taught is that's the last thing to scream. So when you've gone to a physical illness, something's trying to tell you something.
Yeah. And the very word dis-ease, I mean, if you break it down, it's being uneasy in yourself. So that occurs when we're not paying attention to the ordinary signals. And our body doesn't, unfortunately, you know, it doesn't speak English. It speaks the wisdom and the truth of reality that was pre-lingual. And so we have to learn to listen in a different way. We're so accustomed to listening to words, but our body speaks through the nervous system and through our feelings and through the physiology of its connectivity with our mind. It sends signals. And our job is to receive those signals as fully as we can, interpret them to the best of our ability, and understand that it's our body's way of inputting, hey, here's what I think. You know, slow down there, mind.
Yes. And they say in the longest journey from your mind to your heart too, of, you know, coming from that heart place. And then there's the womb place. They talk, you know, I've talked to people who have that belly wisdom. So it's kind of like, you know, it keeps getting deeper and deeper in the work that we need to do here. Well, we're going to take another break and we'll come back shortly and talk more with Eileen Workman and about Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the Rad Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-972-5366.
Discover the healing medicine from the giant monkey tree frog Cambo. Cambo practitioner Ginny Rutherford and professional psychic Todd Rolson have come together for lively discussions of alternative healing medicines from the Amazon. Ginny and Todd bring you Cambo Talk Radio. Tune in each Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific to hear from guests all over the world with real life stories and the medicinal benefits of Cambo. For more information, visit CamboKiss.com. Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms Helping Everyday Women Create Extraordinary Lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life. Each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I am talking with Eileen Workman, and we were just talking about, we were talking about a lot about ego and dealing with how we get to a place of neutrality and stillness, and when we have negative thoughts come up or negative energy towards us. And one of the things I want you to talk about, Eileen, is and I think something very common for women to do is that seeking acceptance and wanting to be understood. And there's something in your book, there's a paragraph that I loved. It talks about when we do that, it means giving your power over to another person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point of that is that, and I think you're especially right, it is a huge issue for women today, is that we want to be accepted, we want to be received positively, we want people to understand us and to appreciate us. So to the extent that we feel a compulsion to make that happen, we are handing to the other individual the power to say, no, I'm not going to accept you, I'm not going to appreciate you, I'm not going to understand you. And that puts us in the position of energetically burning a lot of time and energy and focus trying to change somebody else's mind. And all they have to do is say, no, I won't change my mind, and they have all the power and we have none. And I think the important thing for us to realize, and this is a hard awakening, is that we can't change anybody else's mind. We can only change our own mind. So for me, there was a huge wake-up call in realizing how disempowered I had become, so sincerely trying to make everybody love me and like me and think I was a wonderful person. And when somebody, I could have 100 people say, you're great, and one person says, you're not all that. And I would go to that one person and be like, oh, really? Why?
Yeah.
Tell me why. Let me figure out if you don't understand me. Let me explain. And there are people out there who, because of where they are in their own process, are okay being cruel to others because it's their way of getting power, of feeling powerful, of assuaging their own wounded ego. So the minute we seek understanding from somebody like that, we're going to find ourselves in that position of disempowerment. So for me, it's been learning to love and bless those people. And when they speak to me in that way, rather than me take it personally and say, oh, they're saying that about me, there's that me again, instead of looking through the lens of me, saying, what is happening here? Why is this person speaking this way? What's going on with them that is calling that energy forward? What strategy are they employing and why? And if I can see what they're doing as a reflection of them, whatever is internally upsetting or problematic or wounded in them, then I can call on my own compassion because it can meet them in that space of wounding. I've been wounded too. I know what it's like to feel disempowered and want to take power from somebody else. I've been there. So I can address what's real rather than what I'm assuming, which is that they're really speaking about me and this is some truth about me I need to understand or I want to change. So that's where the real power lies for me in the process at this point.
Yeah, I love that. We do assume that what they're talking about us, mm-hmm. you know, even if they're not right in front of us, you know, like our minds just will just cycle that over and over. It's about us. And sometimes, you know how you blame yourself for saying something, like if you're in public or, you know, you're speaking and you say something, oh, why did I say that? And you kick yourself. No one remembers but you.
Yeah, and there are times, too, when people actually will say things directly to us, like, well, I think you're stupid and naive. And we hear those words, and they feel like little arrows penetrating our heart. So what we want to do is close the wound, and we want to make that person put their arrows back in the quiver. So we try to convince them that they're wrong, when instead it's really more beneficial for us to receive that energy lovingly and say, oh, this is a person who is angry and upset about something, and they have a perspective that they feel hasn't been heard or isn't being met. How can I open to their perspective? How can I allow something, even this dissonant, to be in my field and let it show itself fully to me? And then maybe I find an opening to commune with it at a different level, at a deeper level of awareness. Not just on the surface argumentative, that's that rational, reasonable thing again, but mm-hmm. all the way down into the heart, using the wisdom of the mind and the compassion of the heart to meet them in a new place. That's where the magic happens.
Yeah. And as you were talking, I was thinking, that takes a lot of discipline and focus. And I think that one of the words in the book you talk about is attention, you know, putting your attention on these things that are happening. You know, what is that question? What is happening? Putting your attention to that instead of what's going on with the other person.
Mm-hmm. And I would also say, too, that this, whenever we undertake a new process, it's sort of like the fool's journey, where you set out completely ignorant about what it is that you don't know. And that's what gives you the courage to start. And then once you get going, like let's say you want to learn how to play guitar, you know, oh, I'm going to do this. And then you go out and you get a guitar and you take a couple of lessons and you think, oh my goodness, I'm really bad. I don't know what I'm doing. And from that place of ignorance, you move into kind of conscious incompetence and you discover what you don't know. And so you become a sponge and you start learning and you practice and you fall down and you're going to skin your knees and you're going to get blisters on your fingers and things are going to happen that are uncomfortable. And it's having the will to continue the journey that moves you to conscious competency. So I encourage people not to get despairing when they make mistakes or when they go through this process and they fall back on their old patterns and start yelling at somebody or begging, saying, please, please love me. We all do that. I still do it, you know, even though I've practiced this thoroughly for quite some time, I still find myself on occasion, you know, in that situation, particularly with family members and old deep patterns that come forward.
Mm-hmm.
That can
yes.
be a real challenge. So
yeah.
having compassion for yourself is the key, and being able to just say, okay, I'm going to keep going. And ultimately, we then develop unconscious competency, where the pattern that we're repatterning becomes so much a part of us that it no longer is something we have to think about. It's just who we are. So that's the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's great. So one last minute, what do you want people to come away with from your book?
I think if you come away from anything with this, from reading this book, it's that love is the underlying energy of the universe. Love is what we're here to do. It's what separates us or sets us apart from so many of the other things in the world, is that we have the conscious capacity to deliver love into the world. And that when we do so, it's not that we have a finite amount of it to give to somebody. I don't have to look for people who are deserving of my love and parse it out like it's some sort of rare gift. I can love everybody and everything in every moment, no matter how it shows up. And the advantage to me when I do that is that as it passes through my physiological body and moves into the world, it always kisses me first.
Mm.
So I am the first consciousness that is bathed in the love that I'm delivering to the world, and it feels good. So I want to do more of that.
Yes.
And that's the repatterning. Go ahead.
Yeah. Nope. That's great. We're at the end of our show, but that, a great message. Yeah. Remember, when you're sending out love, you are receiving it too. So, you know, life gets better. So thank you so much, Eileen, for being on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience and to dialogue with you.
Yeah. Well, check out the book, Raindrops of Love for a Thirsty World, and just go to her website, EileenWorkman.com. So I'm Christina. I'm founder of Women of Wisdom Foundation and also author of an Amazon bestseller, and it's also an award-winning book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. It's available now in Kindle, which gives lots of color art. It's full of art, poetry, stories, many women that have been to the conference, great speakers, Jean Bolen, Jean Houston, Marion Widman, just great voices of the divine feminine. So you can check us out at womenofwisdom.org. So I hope everybody has a fabulous weekend and you are enjoying your summer, and we'll be back again next Friday.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today, Radio with Chris Stainis.